Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. Did you know that Uprising is now a TV show as well as a radio show? We rely on subscribers to our YouTube channel to fund the TV production of Uprising. And you can sign up to be a subscriber at youtube.com/uprisingwithsonali. More than 6 months after the Occupy Wall Street movement burst into existence in cities around the United States in late 2011, an unusual incarnation of that movement made its mark in Berkeley, California. On Earth Day 2012, a group of Occupy activists took over a tract of land owned by the University of California, Berkeley, and planted thousands of seedlings. They then set up camp and erected a banner that read, "Occupy the Farm." Not surprisingly, officials didn't take too kindly to this show of unauthorized grassroots control of land and food. Not only did riot police kick out the urban farmers, but UC Berkeley tried to sue 15 of the activists. Now, the inspiring story of how a group of activists attempted to live their vision for a just world is told in a new documentary entitled Occupy the Farm. The film has received rave reviews and has just opened in select theaters around the country. And joining me in studio today is the director and producer of the film, Todd Darling. Welcome to Uprising, Todd.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, first, tell us about the exactly how it all began. The activists in the film refer to the creation of the farm as Occupy 2.0. This was essentially a tract of land that had been used for primarily agricultural research, but the university had some plans to develop it. What was how did it all begin in that area?
This piece of land history began 80 years ago. It's been a research farm for 80 years. And the University of California is a land-grant college, which means that it is obligated to teach agriculture. Land-grant colleges were set up to establish public higher education for the average person back in the Civil War. So the university has to teach farming, and this farm is their last farm anywhere close to the campus of UC Berkeley. During the Occupy movement, one of the people who organized this, Effie Rawlings, drove by the place and recognized this place should be a farm, not a real estate development, and started to plan the occupation 6 months before it actually took place. So the mission of the university to teach agriculture conflicted with their desire to turn the land into money by privatizing it through a real estate development. And the moment that it's happening, right at the moment of Occupy, is when the economy has crashed, people are hungry, malnutrition in cities like nearby Oakland are running 38% among children, food insecurity in Alameda County is almost 30%. So here the university is going to take out of agricultural research their last farm and turn it into a shopping center and condos. It just seemed completely wrong. And so that's why the occupation was begun.
Well, let's play a preview of the film, Occupy the Farm. And it's, as I mentioned, is already showing in select theaters nationwide. And we'll tell our audience how they can actually watch the film. But here is a preview of the film.
It's inherently hopeful to plant a seed, because you hope that it grows.
People have taken over the land and tried to rescue it.
We brought out the rototillers, then we brought out the compost, and then we brought out the plants, and it was just like, wow, we're really doing this.
You are trespassing. We are ordering you to leave.
We will regain control of that property.
Earth Day demonstration is turning into a standoff between occupiers and UC Berkeley. Protesters have now taken over a plot of university-owned land.
This is a fight about the allocation of an asset. Land.
It's the last really prime soil in the East Bay to grow food on.
This is where the proposed Whole Foods would be.
Not just Whole Foods, but it's also an assisted living center for senior citizens, and I believe some retail space.
If they're left to their own devices, the Gill Tract will be reduced to a garden box.
We believe this land should be permanently preserved for urban agriculture.
They think a public asset means they can use it the way they want to use it. It's really not the way we look at it.
Our main concern is water right now.
The university actually shut off our water.
And what we're going to be doing is handing buckets over the fence.
And if about 6 a.m. We were woken up by some police over the megaphone.
Force would be used against them if necessary, and that force could have included chemical agents.
The university escalated the impasse, filing a lawsuit against 15 named individuals.
You say it's a scare tactic. Does it scare anybody?
Well, we're committed to farming this land, and we're going to stay here and keep farming.
I need control back of this site.
Somebody ran by saying, cops, riot cops, lots of riot cops.
Police are the facade behind which the administration hides.
This is public land. We are giving it away.
But what they have done is given a wake-up call to the whole community.
It was like, wow, okay, we really are having an impact.
Like, we didn't know that it was going to work.
The whole point of this is to not talk about what we want and to not demand what we want, but to make what we want real.
And that is Occupy the Farm, a preview of the film that captures a very interesting moment in the Occupy Wall Street movement that didn't really make as much national news as it ought to have. But now through your film, Todd Darling, you're the producer and director of the film. The film can hopefully bring back this very interesting idea. Now, let's tell our audience a little bit about what the farm looked like and felt like at its height. I mean, essentially, people planted, 200 volunteers planted 15,000 seedlings, thinking they'd be kicked off right away, but they weren't kicked off right away, so they set up camp. What did it feel like in the moment in its peak?
It was very happy. It was the first thing that I noticed when I walked on the place was how happy it was. And it was kind of surprising because all these people were breaking the law. They're all trespassing. They could be arrested at any time. Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Oakland had just come to an end a few months before.
People were violently still come to an end by
people counseling. Were still in the hospital from it. So you had this sort of, on the one hand, this tension that they're doing something illegal and very oppositional. At the other, at the same time, there are families, children planting baby zucchini, you know, out in this, you know, beautiful green field, setting up a camp. And it was this feeling of they were liberated. They were very happy. So people were working with a purpose. They're working together. There are all kinds of people who had come onto the land.
There were some people from surrounding neighborhoods didn't ever have the chance to do this kind of gardening. But then among the farmers were also a bunch of UC Berkeley grads.
It was a pretty mixed group of people. There were people from Occupy Oakland. There were people who, you know, some people had houses, some people didn't have houses who were there. There were the neighbors. There were the children from the elementary school. There were UC grads. It was a very mixed bunch of people who were out there digging their hands in the ground.
So rather than raiding the farm right away, the first thing that authorities did was turn off the water. What did that do to the farm, and what sort of lessons did they get from that very important, perhaps, preview of what we as a state in California and maybe as a country might be facing soon? Water is a very precious resource.
Water became sort of the organizing principle of the place. Water became it's kind of a central organizing element. The university, after about 2 days, maybe even less, turned the water off. And they thought, the farmers think, well, how are we going to grow 2 acres of crops without any water? So they panicked for a moment. And then someone with a pickup truck showed up with a donated tank on the back. And then someone else donated a hose at their house. And then they filled up the tanks, and they would roll in the tanks in backs of pickup trucks. And then people would, they'd take the water out, put it into gallon buckets, and then carry it out. And they hand-watered 2 acres of crops for weeks.
Now, it's amazing that on this land was slated to build not just an assisted living facility and some stores, but also a Whole Foods. Now, you know, it's interesting because what the farmers were doing might be considered the very definition of creating Whole Foods, you know, lowercase W and F, by growing this. But we are supposed to, and this also, I think, is so symbolic of this, the problem today. We are living in a world where our food system, we are supposed to be getting our Whole Foods from a corporate source rather than growing them ourselves.
Exactly. I think that one of the things that struck me profoundly was the notion of resilience, the notion that you could do these things yourselves, and that within even in a densely packed urban setting, you can grow a significant amount of food. And right now in the world, the world's food supply, 15% of it is grown inside of cities. And I think that that's, you know, indicates that we don't need to rely on a grocery store for all of our food. And in fact, in many poor urban neighborhoods, there's no Whole Foods. There's no grocery stores at all. There's only liquor stores with chips and soda pop. So the notion that you can grow your own food is very powerful, and really came right up against the notion of building a shopping mall on a farmland.
And now the other aspect that this film sort of symbolized and exposes is the opposition between academics and activists. Academics at the UC Berkeley system saw this land as being their experiment ground, essentially. They did seed research on it. I believe some of it sort of GMO research. And they didn't like seeing activists actually use the farm, right?
It's the university is not a monolithic thing. The people are fighting each other constantly.
Yeah, it's not homogeneous.
So some of the academics were using the land for corn gene research that goes into GMOs for seeds as well as for energy companies, that kind of research. Other of the academics are doing agricultural research of a more traditional sort and, organic agricultural research. So there was this definite tension about what was the future of this land. Was it going to be a shopping mall? Was it going to be used to research for GMOs? Or was it going to be used for research for sustainable urban agriculture? And this clash was central to what happened to this piece of land.
The story is somewhat reminiscent of what we experienced in Southern California several years ago with the South Central Farm, where a number of immigrant communities in South Central Los Angeles simply started farming for their food on an unused piece of land, and then it became this powerful symbol of subversion against a corporate food system, and they bulldozed it. It was told in an Academy Award-nominated film called The Garden. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if the Occupy the Farm activists were in any way inspired by that.
They were inspired by that. They were also inspired by the MST in Brazil, mm-hmm. that's taken over land for landless people there in Brazil. So yeah, all these things came into play in their planning of it. It's important to note, though, that this is public land. The garden in South Central was privately owned.
Right.
And that this land is supposed to be used for research for the public good. And when you talk about the conflict between academics, one of the key battles is who is going to control the powerful research engine of the University of California? It's the biggest research engine in the world. Who is going to control it? For what ends is this going to be used? Is it going to be for public good, or is it going to be siphoned off into public interest?
And it wasn't as though UC Berkeley
private interest.
Not as though UC Berkeley, didn't hear from people before this. There had been people for years urging the university to do something constructive with the public land, but they were choosing to put it into a development. Finally, tell us what happened. There was a lawsuit. What happened to the farm? What's the future plans for this? And also how people can watch the film.
I don't want to give too much away about how the film ends, but there were lawsuits that went back and forth. The people, the organizers of Occupy the Farm, have been very persistent, mm-hmm. and they've been dedicated, and the community has really come out in support. It's not that everyone loves them, but a lot of people have supported them. The land at this point parts of the land are still being fought over. That's ongoing. The story is not completely done, but the Occupy the Farm has managed to achieve something quite significant here, both in terms of getting the land as well as having a model for organizing.
And the film is going to be screened starting March 30th in North Hollywood, March 31st Claremont, California, March 31st also Oakland, California, West LA, Portland, Oregon, as well as on the East Coast, Burlington, Vermont, etc. Can you give out a website where people who are interested can find where their local screenings are?
Yes. Here in Southern California, it's going to be shown at the Lemley Theaters, the NoHo 7, mm-hmm. Claremont 5, and the Royal. Please go to OccupyTheFarmFilm.com or also on Facebook, Occupy the Farm Film. And there's a list of events and where we're we will be showing the film.
That's OccupyTheFarmFilm.com. Todd, best of luck to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
My guest, Todd Darling, is the director and producer of the documentary Occupy the Farm. This is Uprising. We'll be right back.